News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It's not news that traditional newspapers have been struggling. That's been going on for at least the past decade. But a recent Pew Center report on the state of American newspapers indicates an industry still in flux. For example, the dramatic slide in daily circulation has almost stopped, and circulation is even up a bit for Sunday papers. Many newspapers are also charging more for both hard copy and online versions, and so those revenues are stronger. But they're not enough, Pew says, to make up for the huge drop in advertising dollars, down 60% from a decade ago, and digital ad sales don't come close to filling the gap. Given these trends, it's no surprise that employment in newspaper journalism is declining, according to Pew, from 57,000 people 25 years ago to about 40,000 today. And these national developments really hit home in New Hampshire this spring, with layoffs at major papers like the Nashua Telegraph, the Union Leader, and the Eagle Tribune. But some papers are emerging from these struggles, transformed and even thriving. Sometimes it's just a matter of finding the right niche in the community or the right business model. As one successful small-town publisher told NHPR, the end is nowhere near. What is near is a new beginning. Today in The Exchange, what that new beginning might look like for New Hampshire newspapers. And let's hear from you. Do you read a daily paper, hard copy or online? Why or why not? What do you get out of that newspaper? What do you see lacking in its coverage? The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have three guests with us. Joining us from Boston, Joshua Benton, director of the Nieman Journalism Lab at Harvard, part of the Nieman Foundation's effort to help journalism figure out its future in the internet age. He spent 10 years in newspapers, most recently at the Dallas Morning News. Joshua Benton, great to have you. Thanks for your time.
Good morning.
Also with us, Howard Altshuler, executive editor of Seacoast Media Group, a network of print publications and websites serving coastal New Hampshire and southern Maine. These include the Portsmouth Herald, the Exeter Newsletter, and the Hampton Union. And Howard, good to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Terry Williams, president and chief operating officer of the Keene Sentinel. Until just recently, he was publisher and president of the Telegraph Publishing Company for almost 19 years. He worked in various editing roles at the Nashua Telegraph before becoming publisher. And Terry Williams, good to have you, and congratulations on your new job.
Thank you very much.
Well, and gentlemen, all of you, and I think I'll turn to you first, Terry. You know, it's been at least a decade of this troublesome era for the traditional newspaper. Where would you say, Terry, this profession is now? If you were at a party and someone said, hey, Terry, how's it going? What would you say?
Well, I'd say we're still in transition. I think it's still going to be several years before the right formula is figured out, but I do think there have been a lot of things that have happened in the last, you know, couple of years, several months, that are positive, particularly in the area of paid circulation. And so I do think there is a way out, and I think it's going to take more work. It's going to take a lot of hard work, but I guess I'm very optimistic that this can be solved and that newspapers will continue to be a very, very much a key part of the fabric of our local communities.
You know, it's interesting that you said it'll be several years before we figure this out, Terry. It's been a while, though. I mean, it's been like a decade and a half at least since we've been talking about this decline in newspapers. I think the heyday, according to Pew, was, you know, 25 years ago.
Yeah, it has been. But I think if you take a look at what newspapers have done with their websites and the growth of traffic and online visitors, that's an indication that part of the business, although it needs to do better in terms of its financial contribution to the operation, we can point to the traffic that we get to our websites as an indicator of just how important we are in people's lives and the fact that they still need what we do. So, yeah, you can take a look at the struggle, but I think you also have to take a look at some of the things that are indicators of growth in readership and growth in participation.
Howard, what do you think? Again, if someone came up to you and said, hey, Howard, how's the business? What would you say?
Well, I think to Terry's point, it's more of a revenue problem than a readership problem. I feel like our reach is broader than it's ever been, and it's growing very rapidly, not just on our websites for us, Seacoast Online, but also mobile is up over, you know, 100% year over year for us. We're also able to amplify our message by using social media, you know, Facebook, Twitter. We're able to reach readers in ways they probably couldn't have during the heyday of newspapers. So for us, it's not, you know, how do we reach the audience? The question is, how do we pay the bills? And for our company, we've really been trying to diversify. We used to be very almost solely reliant on print advertising. And now commercial print is a growing division for us. Commercial delivery, print delivering other people's newspapers is an important business for us. We do things like local Groupon deals that are growing rapidly. That has a, you know, a subscriber list of 12,000 people, niche publications. But you say it's been going on for a long time, and I fully expect that if I have 20 more years in this business, I will be fighting just as hard every day for the next 20 years.
Well, one of the things that you guys have done, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, Howard, is you've got the hardware, if I could call it that, the actual machines that print these papers out, and several papers have outsourced their printing to you. That's another revenue source for you guys.
Right, and it's funny, the decision was made before the most recent downturn in newspapers, so you sort of decide on a big project like that, and then you go forward, and then you pass the point of no return.
And cross your fingers.
So when we opened up a new $7 million Goss press in February 2007, there were a lot of people who might have looked at us and said, what are those guys doing? and we may have said that ourselves. But there's been a consolidation of commercial printing, and we were lucky to have this really good equipment, a very well-trained staff. They've gone through Six Sigma training. They've become very efficient at what they do. And we've been able to maximize the press we have. And then very recently, we're able to strike a deal with Foster's Daily Democrat and the union leader to do additional printing at the Foster's facility. And that's a company called SMG2.
Well, and Josh Fenton, what do you see nationally and what do you see reflected in these New Hampshire stories? You know, some layoffs, some struggles, but also some optimism.
Well, I think one thing that's worth noting is that the newspaper business is not a monolith. You know, the New York Times is in a fundamentally different business than the Hartford Courant is in, and they're in a very different business than you know, your other guests are in. The national newspapers have had their struggles, but I think they, generally speaking, feel confident about their future. The Internet has exposed their work to a much broader audience than a print-only paradigm could have. The metro papers, the Boston Globes, the Baltimore Suns, the Dallas Morning News, my old paper, are in a lot of trouble, have shrunk a lot, and are really trying to grapple with being a little bit not big enough to provide the substantial national international report that a paper like The Times can do, but also not being small enough that it has the same connection to the community and connection to its advertisers that a local paper might. So I think that's part of the issue. Is that I think New Hampshire's papers, because they tend to be on the smaller end of the spectrum, are in a somewhat better position than would be the case with you know, the papers that have historically been larger. That said, you know, I think the answers that newspapers have been trying to reach to deal with the financial question is getting into other businesses. And, you know, your guests just talked about them, you know, expanding commercial printing, getting into niche publications, doing digital marketing for businesses in the area, that sort of thing. Unfortunately, those are all businesses that are great, and I'm very happy to see newspapers expanding into them. They don't really do much to deal with the fundamental problem of the print product, which is that print advertising continues to decline at a very rapid rate. It has slowed somewhat from the depths of the Great Recession, but it's still going down, and it really shows no sign of decreasing. Newspapers have been able to deal with that by increasing circulation rates and making it so that the core readers who remain in print are paying more than ever before, generally speaking, and they've been able to get some bump out of the creation of paywalls and digital subscription plans. But I would worry about whether you continue to see growth from those sorts of strategies. I think there are still some very big questions about the state of newspapers financially.
Yeah, so picking up on what Howard said, he said it's not about readers. We've got the readers. It's about figuring out business models to pay the bills, and you just alluded to that as well, Joshua. What about the idea, though, that, you know, there's a school of thought, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but there's a school of thought that people today aren't interested in the big, serious reporting, the investigative journalism. You know, they want the quick hit, they want the superficial coverage, they want the people interest coverage, that there is less of an appetite for sort of what we could call serious hard news.
Well, let me. I would first quibble with the idea that there isn't a problem with readers. It is true that more people probably spend their day consuming the content of a newspaper than was the case 10, 20 years ago. But that's in the context of their consuming an awful lot more media of all kinds. When you add all the time that people spend consuming digital media and news and information and things that would have previously been the ambit of newspapers, newspapers' share of that media consumption continues to shrink. And I do think there are some significant questions there. But to your point, I don't think that there's really a ton of evidence that people are shrinking away from hard news or from the kinds of content that newspapers have traditionally produced. First of all, newspapers, you know, historically produce a lot of different kinds of content. They were by no means limited to six-part investigations that got mayors thrown in prison. You know, they always had the comics, and they always had the high school sports and lots of other things, and
sure,
the gardening column. But that said, I think what we have seen is a shift away from local and towards national news. You've seen significant increases on national media sources. And broadly speaking, I think it's part of a general trend in America, and New Hampshire might be, I can imagine, would be maybe something of an exception to this trend, but a general trend towards people having their media consumption go from local sources to national sources, whether that's national news outlets like CNN and The Times, or whether that is, you know, a special website that is just about the sports team that they love or their particular interests. People are curating their sources of information more than they had the ability to before.
So they're putting it in those silos that we hear about. I'm interested in this, so I'm going to follow this, and I'm not really interested in this, so I'm not going to even take a look at it.
Well, you can think of that as silos, or you can think of that as people getting beyond the decisions that were made by local media monopolies in a lot of cases, right?
It's all how you look at it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, the phone number for you to join us, join our conversation on newspapers and their future, new models, new ideas, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. We'd love to hear from you. Do you read a daily paper? Do you read it online or the paper copy? Why don't you read a daily paper? Tell us if you don't. If you do, what do you get out of that newspaper? What do you see lacking? Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be back after a short break.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. What's going on this week at NHPR? Well, there's an easy way for you to find out. When you sign up for our new e-newsletter this week at NHPR, you'll find out what the exchange, word of mouth, and our newsroom are planning for the week, and also get a behind-the-scenes look at the station. Click on the Connect menu to sign up for our e-newsletter at nhpr.org. More on the news on newspapers on the exchange. Then at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, we get an update on the escalating crisis in Syria. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Fairfield's Cadillac and Keene, offering Cadillac and other fine automobiles in central New England for 109 years, online at keenecadillac.com. And from Hillsborough House, a locally owned nursing facility, improving the experience and delivery of rehab and residential care for over 50 years. Information at hillsboroughhouse.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, New Hampshire's newspapers and how some are struggling, others are surviving, and some even thriving. We invite you to join us. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org if you'd like, or post a comment on our Facebook page. We have three guests: Joshua Benton, director of the Nieman Journalism Lab at Harvard University. Also with us, Howard Altschiller, executive editor of Seacoast Media Group, and Terry Williams, the new president and chief operating officer of the Keene Sentinel after a long career at the Telegraph Publishing Company. The number for you to join us again, 1-800-892-6477. The email exchange@nhpr.org. And all of you, I want to go now to the situation at New Hampshire's largest newspaper, our only statewide newspaper, and that's the New Hampshire Union Leader and Sunday News. Norm Welsh is with us. He's president of the Manchester Newspaper Guild and web copy editor at the Union Leader. He's been there for a long time. Norm Welsh, good to have you. Thanks for your time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, lots of layoffs and people losing their jobs at the Union Leader, maybe being hired back part-time and so forth. Give us a sense of the morale there at the Union Leader these days.
Well, you know, it's a little bit stressful as things sort of downsize and we try to refit ourselves to the media landscape.
When you say refit ourselves to the media landscape, what do you mean there, Norm?
Well, just as the topic of the show is, you know, the sort of the future of newspapers. We are the state's largest newspaper, but the media landscape is shifting more towards online. We're trying to retool ourselves to take part in that.
Has the expansion of digital, Norm, created opportunities for folks there, new jobs and so forth, or has it meant just everybody has to do their work differently?
A little bit of both. Mm-hmm. We have what we call the new media department, which is basically our online. It's small. I've been at the paper for 25 years and just recently moved full-time into the online version of the product where I'm working all the time on the web.
And what's behind some of the layoffs that we've heard about, Norm, and the downsizing? What do you think is behind that trend?
Well, it's the revenue issue. It's, you know, the advertising dollars, which has floated newspapers' boats for the last century, is moving away from newspapers that paid the bills. Right now, you know, there's not enough money to pay all of the bills that the paper had.
Yeah, Howard talked about that earlier,
right.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead. Did you want to jump in more there, Norm?
No, that was it.
With fewer people at the Union Leader, how do you feel, Norm, the quality of the journalism that you produce has been affected?
Well, the quality of what we produce, I think, is as high as it's ever been. The trouble is, with fewer people, we can't cover as much as we used to cover. I think that the public suffers from that, in that they don't get all of the information that they need from their town meetings, from, you know, city hall, from the police, that sort of thing.
So there are stories that you used to go out and tackle, and you don't do that anymore, or as much. You have to cut back on the topics that you cover.
Right, and I think you're seeing that at all of the media centers in the state and throughout the country, where there aren't enough journalists anymore to cover everything. So you're seeing a lot of things being repeated through press releases. If you look at WMUR or any of the state's newspapers, we might all have the exact same story because we got it from a press release.
Oh, boy. So repeated through press releases instead of the journalists taking the time or having the time to do some original reporting on the content of that press release.
Right. No, that's a scary issue for us.
We've been talking, Norm, about new models that work and touching on some of the things that Howard's doing. Joshua also talked about some new models that newspapers are tackling. Do you think the Union Leader has found that right model yet?
I don't know that we've found the exact right model. I don't know if anyone has, frankly. I wish if somebody did, they'd let us all know. But, you know, we're tinkering with different things. The company is constantly bringing out new products. As the union president, I'm constantly in a dialogue with the company on how we're going to help make that happen. You know, just different online entities we've been working with, different advertising avenues they're looking at, and you know, just exploring to find out what works.
You know, Norman, I'm sure you've heard this. In tight times, everybody's told do more with less, and certainly things have been tight at newspapers, especially sort of mid-size newspapers like yours. You can't go totally hyper-local because
right.
You're a statewide newspaper. Make the case, again, you're the union president, make the case, Norm, that at some point you can't do more with less because the coverage starts to suffer.
Well, I think we're starting to see that. To a degree all over the place, including here in New Hampshire, where different things that, as I said before, different things that we used to cover, we just don't have the bodies to cover anymore. I think that becomes, you know, it sounds sort of dramatic, but it becomes dangerous to democracy when you don't know what's going on at City Hall because nobody was sitting there and you're not sitting there yourself. That's a huge service that newspapers and journalism has provided that is sort of getting fragmented and going away. I think I think the public needs to take a bigger interest in this issue.
Now, that's real interesting. The public needs to take a bigger interest in this issue. Maybe the public doesn't care? What do you think, Norm?
I don't know. Right now, it seems like maybe they don't. I think some education, it might help in terms of what we provide. That people used to just be, you know, they used to just know that that's where you would go for your information. Now it's so fragmented. A lot of people are getting their information from friends off of Facebook or different blogs, but it's really not objective news like we've been providing.
Well, Norm, good luck, and thank you very much for being with us.
Okay, thanks very much.
That's Norm Welsh, president of the Manchester Newspaper Guild and web copy editor at the Union Leader. He's been a copy editor at that paper for more than 20 years. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And gentlemen, before we go to our callers, I think to you first, Terry Williams. What do you think about what Norm said? He's really worried about the quality of journalism going downhill because you just don't have enough bodies covering things.
Well, it's a legitimate concern. I think that the secret to keeping a newsroom that is strong is to take a very diversified approach to how you bring the revenue in. And we still have a significant amount of revenue coming in through traditional sources, advertising. The piece that I think offers us the most opportunity is to do a better job of explaining to the public the value of what we do and asking them to participate in that by perhaps paying a little bit more for what we provide on a daily basis. And this is both in print and online. I think if we're going to be successful, our model, our financial model, is going to be something around where 50% of our revenue comes from some form of paid circulation, whether it's print or online. And the balance comes from traditional advertising plus an array of events and niche publications and other things that we can do. And I think we have the marketing and promotional horsepower to do because we still can call together a tremendous number of people with what we write and what we promote. And those are the strengths we have to play off.
What do you think, Howard?
And I think for us, you just have to recognize that you can't be everything to everyone. And we try to really focus on what we can do that other people can't do. We are not trying to out CNN. We focus on the local news. So, for example, right now, development in Portsmouth is a huge issue. So we're going to be all over that. And the people in our community are really, really feel passionate about that. And, you know, the letters to the editor are pouring in. And we know people are responding to that story. When we had the 50th anniversary of the Thresher sinking this year, we did a year of stories leading up to that, talking to as many of the family members that we could. And that's just distinctly local stuff that people aren't going to get anywhere else. If there's a local bar that's been causing problems and someone is punched and killed, and we have the definitive report on that faster and more in-depth than everybody else, then we're going to be the source that people are going to turn to. The trick is to know who you are, what you can do really well, and then do it and stick to it. And just because people are yelling at you saying, where's the Pope on page one? You said, that's not our mission. You can find out about the Pope anywhere.
Right.
And
go
I'm
to
sorry
the,
you're upset,
yeah.
But that's not what we do.
Go to the internet. And, right. You know, maybe a little easier for you guys to focus successfully because, again, you know, Terry, you're serving the Keene area. Howard, you're serving the Seacoast. A little trickier, right, Howard, for the Union Leader. They're still a statewide newspaper.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And Joshua, to you, Norm touched on this and you and I touched on this before the break as well, this idea of people fragmenting the way they get their news. I called it silos. You called it more curating. We heard a concern from Norm, though, that, you know, people aren't getting their news from necessarily worthy sources, sort of hearsay on the internet and so forth.
Well, I appreciate him making that argument. I mean, if you look at the way that most people can get news online, they tend to have three or four websites that they settle on, that they go to. And often those sites include folks like the New York Times or CNN. They might also include aggregators like the Huffington Post or if, you know, if they have a political leaning, it might be a liberal site or a conservative site. I guess I'm a little bit less concerned about the siloing and just generally think that it's hard to think back what news was really like before the internet came along. we're used to the idea that for the kinds of information that isn't produced by a locally available source, we can go get it someplace else. Well, that wasn't the case before. While it is true that a lot of local sources of news have been weakened by what's happened, and that's a very unfortunate thing, and has led to a lot of great journalists losing their jobs and the rest. From an information access point of view, people have the ability to go get information whenever they want, wherever they want. And that some of those people are going to be getting their news through sources that don't write in the same way that newspapers write. I think that's something that we sort of have to recognize is going to happen. If you look back in the history of newspapers, newspapers weren't always in the form that they were in the 1980s and 1990s. Newspapers were born as partisan outlets. You'd have a city like Boston, where I am, you'd have 10 or 15 daily newspapers, each of them taking their own slice of the ideological spectrum, some aiming at wealthier readers, some aiming at poorer readers. You still have something like the Boston Globe and the Boston Herald, both sort of taking their own place in the market. I tend to think that more competition and more points of view is a good thing. The question is whether or not you're going to get that kind of competition on local news. You get that on national news, you get that on politics, you get that on a lot of areas, but it's unclear whether or not you're going to see that same sort of ecosystem develop at the local level. That's what I think is the most concerning.
Yeah, and you're echoing a sentiment, I think, Joshua, that came out of a Slate piece recently that caused a lot of controversy. The person writing on Slate said, from a news consumer's point of view, it's never been better. There's a ton out there, and a lot of it's really good, and we can access it how and whenever we want.
That's true. One other thing that is worth noting is that, before the internet came along, if you didn't catch the news on one day, if you didn't read the newspaper that day, or if you didn't watch, the local TV broadcast that night, that news was missing. You weren't going to get that news again. One reason why people have felt that it's okay to not follow the news in as granular and incremental a fashion as they might have some time ago is the knowledge that they can go back and sort of do their homework after the test, right? They can go back and realize if there's a story, if they want to catch up on what's going on with the healthcare debate or the immigration debate, they can go do that. So that's part of the reason why information seeking has shifted away from sort of feeling an obligation to keep up on local issues to something that's a little bit more finely attuned to the readers, the consumers' interests.
Let's take some calls, gentlemen. Lots of people who want to jump in on our conversation. The number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Lauren's waiting in Durham. Hi, Lauren. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was interested by the comment earlier about the influence of social media and how that's affected accessing the news. And I think about, I'm someone who checks on all of the news sites each morning. When I wake up, I check throughout the day to just see updates of news stories on the news websites using typically my phone, my Android device. And I find some of the news sites are very hard to navigate, but I also find a lot of times I can access details about what's happening in the world faster by using a social media site. I don't want to name which one, but the one most of us tend to use, faster than going to the news sites themselves, because a lot of times, like, for example, with the earthquake we had a while ago, I was able to find out what was happening faster via social media than any of the local news sources.
Lauren, can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
Now, when you say I was able to find out, I'm going to put it out there and say maybe on Facebook is what you're talking about.
Exactly.
You were able to find out, but who were you finding out from?
So I went there because my husband was trying to find out from various social sources. We were trying to figure out, why there was a sudden shuttering. We were concerned there might have been some sort of explosion at Pease or something.
Sure.
And trying to make sure that everything was safe in the world. And so as I go on, I see popping up both from people in different parts of the country and then slowly starting to pop up from various news sources into that feed, confirmation that it was, in fact, an earthquake. But in the meantime, I was alternating between those sites and, say, WMUR's website and NHPR's website and, Seacoast Online, and popping back and forth to each of their sites trying to see who had details about what was, in fact, happening, and wasn't getting it from any of their sites until I finally saw confirmation pop up on Facebook.
Yeah, so you kind of got it everywhere. So is this a good thing, Lauren? It sounds like it helped you.
Well, I mean, it helped in that case, but I find myself wondering, I would prefer to get the news directly from the news sources rather than from Facebook, personally. you know, but I don't know that there's any sort of good answer about the best way to access that. And so it's certainly a concern. I would much rather get accurate and less biased news with, you know, clear reporting and keep seeking that out from our local papers.
I see. Lauren, thanks a lot for calling. Terry, real interesting. So she wants news right away, which, you know, especially when something's happening, that's completely understandable. She'd rather get it from a traditional source that she knows is going to check it out and get all the details. But it's not fast enough, so she gets it on Facebook. Anybody can post anything on Facebook.
Yeah, therein lies the issue.
It's not really news. It's what someone says.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that most newspapers are doing and doing very well today is having a very immediate reaction to news and posting news as they get it on Twitter or on Facebook. And I think based on our history and legacy of doing a good job of getting the story accurate, we still are a very good source for that information. And I think it's important that people understand that we continue to try to treat that news just as we would a traditional story to make sure it's accurate before it gets posted. We had a very interesting example of that recently with a tanker and automobile accident in Keene. It came right on our deadline. We were able to get something in the paper, but the afternoon was devoted to posting updates on Twitter, posting updates on Facebook. In the end, I think we had about an equal number of interactions on our website and on Facebook. It was close to 30,000 on each, with people seeking updates, people providing eyewitness accounts, photos, all sorts of interaction taking place through us. And I think that's very instructive. And I think that newspapers are really doing a very good job these days of taking advantage of the social networks and social media to get information out. And so I would suspect that Lauren's sources were probably traditional news sources, even if it was posted on Facebook.
Well, and it's interesting to hear that you're actually getting help from social media as well. Maybe your reporters aren't right there, but there are five people who were right there, and they all let you know about
Absolutely.
It. Yeah. Do you want to jump in there, Howard?
I do. All the reporters today are using social media and using it to their advantage. And I think what happens is a lot of people, everybody can talk about something, but usually our reporters can be on the scene. One of the examples, as Terry was speaking, that came up is we had a tragic police chief shot in Greenland last year, and our reporter was on the scene very quickly, and some of the earliest reports that were coming out were through his Twitter feed, going into the Seacoast Online Twitter feed, and we had feedback afterwards from people saying to us, the only way that we knew what was going on was from your tweets.
Wow.
And so, you know, you've got a credible person and a powerful platform.
All right. We will talk more after a short break. Thanks for that call, Lauren. More in a minute.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members in the Lexus CT Hybrid with a combined EPA rated 42 mpg. Actual mileage will vary. Lexus.com/CT. From North Branch Construction, 54 years experience building custom homes to multimillion-dollar eco-friendly commercial buildings on time, on budget, online at Facebook, LinkedIn, and northbranch.net. And AARP presenting You've Earned a Say, a community discussion on solutions to keep Medicare and Social Security strong. Inviting Granite Staters to join the conversation at aarp.org/NH.
Today on Word of Mouth, working the leaks. Media leaks are currency for public officials and journalists. We'll look at the razor's edge between leaks for advantage and outrage. Plus, a controversial proposal to save New Zealand's dwindling rare birds by wiping out the country's teeming population of feral cats. I'm Virginia Prescott. Kiwis Cat Wars and more on Word of Mouth today at noon and again at 9 on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, the Granite State debate over Medicaid expansion. Email us your thoughts before the program at exchange@nhpr.org. Be sure to join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, the news on New Hampshire's newspapers. Many have been struggling, as we're hearing, but others seem to be hitting a new stride, finding new business models that work. Join our conversation, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And let's go right back to the phones, gentlemen. Joining us now is Edward Engler. He is the publisher of the Laconia Daily Sun, a free daily newspaper. And Edward Engler, good to have you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Well, we hear so much, Ed, about ad revenues declining 60% nationally, according to Pew, and that the digital ads aren't making it up. How do you grab those advertisers? How do you do this? You're free.
I'm sorry, I didn't know. How do we what?
How do you manage to grab the advertisers when we hear that advertising revenue is down so much for many other newspapers?
Well, we've been very fortunate, but I think some of that is we've been able to grow right through the recession, with the exception of one awful month in February 2009 when the automobile industry was in chaos. We have experienced revenue growth every single month through the recession, ranging anywhere from, on an annual basis, from 8% probably at our lowest to more than 30% given year. But I think so we've been very fortunate. But I think part of that, certainly a key to that, is one of the keys to that is that is a maturity issue. Our paper is only 14 years old. And so we never, before the recession, whatever, we never achieved that status, if you will, in terms of revenue and cost structure and all that, that mature legacy papers did. So, and we're in a competitive situation with another competitive daily in town, a legacy daily. So there was market share to be gained. So one of the things we've had going for us is just the fact that you know, if you're the only newspaper in town, there's, you know, theoretically only so much advertising you can get. And if you're a monopoly and you're already getting it, then where do you go from there? In our case, we could gain market share because we had a direct competitor.
Wow. So you're only 14 years old. So it's almost as if you didn't inherit some of the infrastructure and some of the ways of doing business that the older papers did. And that's been an advantage.
Yes. And I think it is an advantage. I would equate it to an analogy I would use. It would be a patent. You know, we never had the patent, so our patent never ran out.
Right. Well, what are the...
And if you built your cost structure based on the patent, and the patent's now gone, you got problems.
What are the challenges, Ed, of doing it this way, of, you know, relying on advertisers, doing it free? What are some of the challenges in the way that you approach this business, if any?
I don't really think, you know, in terms of our own model and our own ability to succeed here in the Lakes region, I don't think there have been any particular challenges. Controlling circulation for us is actually a bigger problem than gaining circulation, because we obviously don't have revenue coming in to offset the printing of paper. So to us, printing a paper is an expense. We print 18,000 and distribute 18,000 papers a day now. By far the largest number in this region of the state. And, you know, we could print 25,000 and have them picked up tomorrow, but that extra 7,000 to us would just be an expense.
Wow. So what do you think people are more likely to read, your print version or your digital version?
Right now we have about, our entire paper is also available online as an e-reader for free. So it's not, so the paper is free at 400 locations, plus locations, plus it's available free online. And I would say that our online readership now, people who are actually reading the e-reader every day, is between 2,000 and 3,000, as opposed to the 18,000 print copies we have.
Yeah. We hear so much, Ed, about the struggles of mid-sized papers, and we've talked about that already. Is there a model from your experience, or are we comparing apples and oranges here?
Well, I don't know. I think you have to be careful about comparing. I think you have to be careful about comparing markets and saying, "Well, this works in one market; it could work in another market." I don't think that's necessarily true at all. I do think that we've been fortunate to have our model work here. There's no question that in our situation, the key to the model is the free. If I had the James Carville equivalent sign on my wall, it would say it's the free stupid. because people just really appreciate getting a daily newspaper that they don't have to pay for. And they become very addicted to it and really appreciate having that. That's what we have learned through the experience. So we have no intention of changing that model. And at first it was a terrible culture shock, because this market, like all markets was just like the concept of a free daily newspaper was just like beyond people's comprehension.
Right. They, how do you do that?
They just didn't understand it. And how could you make money? How could you, you know, this just doesn't make any sense. And so it took a considerable amount of time just to get people used to the idea. But I think that they have, and it's just an accepted form and way of life in the Lakes region now.
One last question for you, Ed. Your business model is clearly different, and you've talked about that. Is your journalism different? Do you cover things differently, or do you only cover certain issues and not other issues?
I don't think it's certainly not different because of the free versus the paid. It is different in the sense that you know, we have a different cost structure, and as we've grown up, and we're pretty frugal, so that we never went through that cycle where we had the huge newsrooms and the huge staffs and editors everywhere and that sort of thing. So we've always been lean. So our target mission, if you will, from day one, which has been pretty successful, is to concentrate on certain areas. We're more like a specialty grocery store from that standpoint. Perhaps we don't carry 10,000 items, but we try to carry 1,000 really good items.
All right. Ed, thank you very much.
Okay.
That's Ed Engler, editor and publisher of the Laconia Daily Sun, a free daily newspaper. The number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. And gentlemen, I'd love to get your thoughts on how the free model works, but we have so many people who want to jump in our conversation. So let's go back to our listeners. Here's a comment that came in on Facebook. Kythe wrote, "The age of physical papers is winding down, just like the telegraph, semaphore lights, and other means of communication that have been replaced by more modern technologies. News can be chosen a la carte through RSS feeds and online news pages. Kythe says, save the trees and put this arcane form of communication to rest." Wow, Joshua Benton, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I think one of the questions is whether or not newspapers are destined to become like, you know, semaphore flags, or more destined to become like radio, a medium that was supplanted as a primary news source, except for, of course, programs like this one. But it has continued on, and radio still is a perfectly thriving business and survived the onset of television just fine, although it changed quite a bit. I do think that One of the real questions that we have looking forward is the degree to which people are going to want to invest the time to curate their own news feeds, right? I mean, I remember when I first discovered RSS feeds, you know, 10 years ago, and thought it was the most amazing thing in the world, and that everyone was going to start reading their news through RSS. Turns out most people don't feel like making the effort to do that sort of a thing. So there's still room for people who provide a package of news. The question is whether or not that package is going to be coming from something like a newspaper or a television network, or whether it's going to be coming from social platforms and aggregators and other forms. Newspapers have always both produced content and curated content. You know, if you think back 20 years ago, if you looked at a newspaper, you'd see a lot of AP Wire stories, and you'd see a lot of syndicated comics, and you'd see a lot of other content that wasn't produced by the journalists employed there. And now we're seeing that other people can do that job of gathering together the package of news and offering it to readers.
Let's take another call if we could. Richard's waiting in Chester. Hi, Richard. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Laura. Thank you. My comment is about particularly the political slant some of our local papers have. I think of newspapers, local newspapers, as almost a utility. I depend on them for local government and state government news in particular. And in my area of Manchester, I have really only one choice, and that's the Manchester paper. But yet, The paper has historically taken a very conservative political position, which is very different than my own. And I wonder why a newspaper is, which at the end of the day is a business, is alienating essentially half of its potential customer base. You wouldn't see a utility arguing or stridently positioning itself on one political extreme or the other. And I wonder what your guests think of that.
Richard, thanks for calling. And in fairness, the union leader's not here, but if they were, they would say our editorial page is conservative, our reporters are fair and unbalanced and so forth. Do you want to comment on that idea, Howard, of political slant?
Yeah, I think, for example, in Portsmouth is a very liberal community, very progressive. All our state reps are Democrats, and our letters page tends to have a more liberal slant because that's what's coming in. And so the recent Kelly Ayotte vote on gun background checks, we were swamped with letters from local Democrats writing in, blasting the senator. And readers who disagreed with that position felt it was us doing it. And
I see.
What I would have to constantly be communicating is, you can write too, and I will run your letter, I promise you. But it can give that impression. And I think also in our minds as journalists, we're very clear on what's news and what's editorial, but I don't think it's always clear to the reader.
The public doesn't make that distinction.
So I can see where people get upset. Political cartoons also seem to be very polarizing. And I've actually got a moratorium on them going on right now just because they were getting me in such hot water.
This is another question for you, I think, Terry. The Telegraph of Nashua had a reputation as being pretty much straight down the line. Keene Sentinel, what do you think? A little bit more of a liberal slant there? Again, it's not really fair. The union leader's not here. They would say their reporters are very fair and balanced, and that it's just the editorial page. I wonder how you deal with that.
Well, it's the same. It's the same circumstance. And I'll speak a little bit about Nashua. Oftentimes, playing things straight down the middle gets you in trouble on both sides, and people want a local newspaper to take a position, to take a strong position, in part, I think, because they're either looking for validation of their own opinion or they're looking for something to argue about. And I think not to have opinion in the paper on the editorial pages would be a real problem.
Even with all the headaches it causes.
Yeah, I think people want the local paper to be a voice for them. And I think it's important to try to present a balanced voice and to provide a number of voices on the editorial pages. But I think it's important, and I think people want that.
All right, let's take another call. Thanks for that point, Richard. And Mark is calling from Portsmouth. Hi, Mark. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello. I can only confirm a lot of what has been said, but I can comment best on the aging demographics. I'm 60 years old, and I devour Howard's newspaper every day. I want to know, and it's important, I want to know which of my neighbors have been picked up at DWI. I want to know which one of them has been shoplifting. And yesterday, my son and I worked together, and I asked him, I said, where do you get your news? He said, I don't know, Dad. I don't read a newspaper, but what I watch him doing is he will go to Howard's online version, pick up a story, then immediately go to Facebook and start, chatting with his friends about it. So they're very active on Facebook, but he's getting his news from what I consider a reliable source. That's the good news, Howard.
All right. What's the bad news, Mark?
The bad news is that, for me, is that his generation isn't picking up a print copy. They have no use for it. And I cannot imagine not having that print copy in my hand. But I must be sending a shiver down their spine listening to me, because as my generation goes, I mean, I want, when I get buried, I want a copy of the Portsmouth Herald in my hand.
Well, Mark, thanks a lot for calling in. And honestly, Howard, we didn't plant him for your benefit, but a pat on the back for you.
And I know who that is.
From a reader. What do you think about his broader point, though? I've heard other people say that in, 20 years, you guys aren't going to print anything.
I would say I have no idea. There's a lot of people who love the tactile feel of print. There's something about, when you have a story with a really good photograph, with really good supporting information right there, laid out in an artistic, appealing way. It's got magic for some people. Now, 20 years from now, who knows what people's tastes are going to be? I try not to think too far beyond the next day and to do the best job I can each day. And I know I sit around and my kids read the comics. They're not reading all the stories in the paper either.
All right. Let's take one more if we could. And Stacy in Hudson, go ahead, Stacy. You're on the air. We're coming close to the end, but I'd love to hear from you.
Okay. Hi. Hi, Terry. It's Stacy. I just want to say I've worked for Terry for many, many years. And as a writer, I thought I'd give my input. And writers have to change as well. And we are changing. I think you'd agree with that, right, Terry?
I would agree with that, Stacy. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, and I think that we need to keep current and keep flexible. I think, I'm in my 50s, so I'm from the old newspaper school, but I've made a point of trying to keep flexible and changing my style to whatever the newspaper's business. We have to get our heads around that. And whatever it takes to keep our ethic, but keep making money, I think is what newspaper reporters have to get their head around.
All right. Thank you, Stacey. Keep your ethic and keep making money. That's right up your alley, Joshua Benton.
Well, both those are good things. I think realistically, you know, we can have a lot of debates around the future of newspapers that talk about, you know, the love that some people have for print. And print is still really important. The average American newspaper still generates around 85% of its revenue from its print product, even though in many cases it has more individual readers through its digital products. Print advertising is still and print circulation are still the two biggest sources of revenue. It's just that we know what direction those are going in. So I always try to remind people there is no off switch on the internet. There's even if you don't like what's happened, it's going to continue happening. I think your caller is correct that individual journalists as well as news organizations are going to have to figure out how can we best adapt to, you know, the new demands of our audiences.
Terry, would you tell a college graduate to consider going into newspaper journalism?
Oh, absolutely.
You would?
I would, yeah. And I've done that, sure. I mean, I think going into journalism gives you a variety of opportunities. It's not necessarily just newspapers, but a variety of opportunities. But I would absolutely encourage them.
All right. Both of you, all of you, thank you very much for coming in. And Joshua Benton, it was great to have you. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Joshua Benton, director of the Nieman Journalism Lab at Harvard University. Howard Altshuler, great to have you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Howard Altshuler, executive editor of Seacoast Media Group. And Terry Williams, again, congratulations on your new job, and thank you for your time as well.
Thank you.
Terry Williams, president and chief operating officer of the Keene Sentinel. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our interns are Faith Meixel and Tim Camerato. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.